This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome into the NBA Morning Deuce for Monday, March 29th. Trade deadline is now 3 or 4 days past, but the buyout market is buzzing. Does it matter? I don't know. I'm bringing on probably the perfect guy to explain to us whether it matters. Alex, still out. He's back tomorrow. But today, I told you on Friday, CBS Sports NBA legend. He's at Outside the NBA, James Herbert, joining the show.
Legend.
His reaction to me calling him a legend. You should have seen it. If this was on video, you would have loved it. James, what's up, dude?
What's happening? I'm just basking in this Aaron Gordon has new life afterglow. So I'm feeling pretty good.
It is fun to watch. We're going to dive into the Aaron Gordon first game with the Denver Nuggets. Not a big slate, actually only four games tonight. We're not even going to talk about the Lakers Magic game. Cause honestly, who gives a shit about that one at this point till there's a LeBron or an Anthony Davis or not a G League team in Orlando for the rest of the season. I'm not really going to dive too deep into those teams. But we will get into Denver. We'll get into the other games, but I want to start with these buyout guys. So I guess we do kind of have to talk about the Lakers because the biggest buyout name, there's this thing, James, and you've been covering the NBA for a long time. So you see it every year and everybody sees it, but the trade deadline passes, teams or fans in particular, sometimes local media that cover teams are like, all right, we didn't get this big man, or we didn't get this guy. We didn't get the guy we thought. So who's going to be in the buyout market? And then it becomes almost, it takes over the news cycle almost as much as the trade deadline did for guys that were like, I don't know, maybe they can be effective, maybe not. And the big names, well, the biggest name this time around was Andre Drummond, who now is a member of the Los Angeles Lakers and seemingly is going to step right in as their starting center, it looks like. What are your thoughts on Drummond to Los Angeles?
I mean, I don't think he should step in as their starting center. He probably will, but I don't like it. If they're going to have this platoon system that's just kind of like depending on the matchup and who is feeling particularly healthy and who they're playing against and whatever they think is necessary, like, it's fine. Like, I think them having these different sort of options at center is not inherently a bad thing. You want to be able to play multiple different ways. I happen to think that the best way for them to play is when they're fully healthy is likely the same thing we saw last year, which is AD at the five. And then the second best way for them to play is Marc Gasol with AD, because Marc Gasol changes the geometry of the court. He's the best passing big man they've obviously had. He can actually space the floor. He's a very good defensive center. Still, I know that people hate that he doesn't move laterally like he used to, even though honestly, he didn't used to move that well laterally either. Yeah. When he was the defensive player of the year, like, he's still an elite defender to me. And he's still their kind of best option most of the time if you want to have a guy next to AD. So to have all of these different dudes there, like, in this period of time where, like, they don't have AD and they don't have LeBron, I feel like just adding talent is probably good. They can run some stuff sort of through Drummond. He's a pretty good passer. He's not a Marc Gasol level passer, but he's a pretty good passer. He's an enormous dude who, like, he's not like an incredible screen setter, but he's just big. So he sets decent screens. He grabs offensive boards. And he's just like a physical presence in a way that Mark isn't at this stage of his career, in a way that, like, Montrez is an intense physical guy, but he's also like really like 6'7". Like, so that gives them something different. And he came at the right price because he's essentially free.
Right.
It's just, I don't know what they promised him. I don't know what he is expecting. I don't know how the other bigs on the roster feel about it and how the stars on the roster feel about it in terms of what they want the Lakers to do when it's actually like winning time. But like, those are what is going to, like, those are the answers to those questions. What is going to make or break this to me? Because if this is a harmonious thing and everybody's having a good time and Drummond isn't that concerned about how many minutes or touches he gets, and we're still seeing Mark when it makes sense to, and we're still seeing a healthy amount of AD at the five when AD is himself healthy, then cool, great. The rich get a little bit richer. It's not a huge swing variable, but they have another option at five and they just kind of need more bodies. So that's cool. But if it ends up being this weird thing where after every playoff game, everybody's writing articles about Frank Vogel's rotation and what are they going to do? And here's Drummond getting targeted this way. And here he is, like, you know, like trying to do too much on offense because he is used to doing a lot. And right now he should probably do almost nothing. Then we have a totally different kind of thing in our hands.
Do you, I know, I like, obviously you're not in the building, but when you, from seeing what you've seen of the Lakers this year and given with the injuries, do you see this as a Band-Aid? Like, we don't know, like, we need more, we need to boost our roster so that we can rest AD and LeBron as much as we need to, particularly AD, till he comes back? Or is it maybe that they don't necessarily think they're getting what they thought they'd get out of Trez and Marc Gasol, and they needed a boost at that position? Like, obviously, I know how you feel about Mark and Trez, but is there a potential that they're not seeing what they thought they'd see? Even though seems like, even though Trez has gotten knocked a little bit this year, I think his numbers are just as good, if not better.
His numbers are good. I mean, Mark was out for a while and he is sick. And his whole family was sick. It sucks. So, I mean, you can nitpick either of those guys. I think big picture, like, you know, when I've seen Mark on the court with LeBron, and I've seen the connection those two guys have, and I've seen the passes Mark has thrown, like, that's who I thought they were going to get. When I've seen Montrez on the second unit, like, you know, gobbling up points in the paint, like, that's who I thought they were going to get. From the start of it, when it happened, I thought Mark was a much better fit and like addressed more of what the team needed than Montrez did. And I still am like a little bit iffy on the Montrez fit with, like, just with how the rest of this roster is structured. It's a roster that already has spacing issues. It's a roster that didn't really need a like center who wants touches on the block necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I still like think that of those two guys, Mark made the more sense to me. And Drummond is just sort of like a larger version of Montrez, kind of, right? Like he hurts the spacing. The spacing's already not great. He is not a guy that you want, like, you know, switching onto smaller guys or like defending in space or anything. Like, I mean, he can make plays defensively. Like, he's got very good hands. He gets a lot of steals. He gets a lot of deflections.
He's a solid passer.
He gets some blocks. Yes. But it's like, he's also not, like, there's a reason why nobody wanted to trade for this contract. There's a reason why a year ago, this contract was essentially dumped. Like, when he was an all-star a few years ago, that was a very different player. He was one of the best athletes in the NBA. He was a vertical spacer. You could switch him onto smaller guys and he'd move his feet. He wasn't like a dominant interior presence. That's part of why the Pistons defense was never as good as you wanted it to be. But I think he was better then than he is now. And certainly offensively, he was better then than he is now. And more of a guy that you had to account for when he was rolling toward the rim. Like, he's just not a very good finisher anymore. I think people maybe look at Andre Drummond and they think, oh my God, LeBron's going to have this great pick and roll partner. Like, no, I think like Montrez is still a far better pick and roll partner and far better finisher than Drummond is. Like, this is not the Drummond that made an all-star team. It's not.
I do wonder. And like, it's interesting because I was going to sort of ask, like, you know, Drummond's a very polarizing player at this point because he does still average a double-double. He's near the top of the league in rebounding every year. And so some people love him. some people say, like, you know, he's just not the same player he was, and not the numbers are deceiving. And I do wonder, it seems like the trend now in the NBA is, if you don't want to be somewhere, just don't play as well as you can. So I do wonder if there's a part of him that will get back a little bit of what he had a couple years ago, being in a situation that he wants to be in.
I mean, I could see him playing, like, okay, so right at the beginning of the year, the first like few weeks, like Cleveland was this like sort of, I don't want to say success story, but like they were like a surprising team. They had really good defensive numbers. Some of that was luck, just teams missing threes and whatever. But some of it was like they were playing like pretty good defense. Larry Nance, this is before Larry Nance got hurt. Larry Nance was just all over the place. They were forcing a lot of turnovers. They were just kind of wreaking havoc. And Drummond, I think, was a part of that. I think Drummond was playing with a lot of energy, and he was extremely active. And that's the version of Drummond that you want. And I think they could totally get that guy. That guy is like a like helpful NBA player. And it my only thing is like that guy is still not who he was a few years ago. And it is not necessarily the kind of helpful NBA player that is like a, that fills a glaring need on this basketball team. That is mm-hmm. that is my issue. Like right. If they had gone and signed, I mean, if they had signed Aldridge, if they had signed Gorgie Jang, like these other buyout guys that were available, I would have at least been like, okay, like that gives him a different look. Like Aldridge is a pick and pop big. Like he has showed this year in San Antonio that he was willing to adjust to a completely different role. They took away his post-ups. They had him actually space out to the 3-point line, which he started doing last year around mid-season. He started shooting threes, but he was like purely a stretch five now. Gorgie Jang is essentially purely a stretch five on offense now as well. And it's like, that would have given them like a different kind of option. Drummond is like a slightly different kind of option, but it is not really so, like so different that I think it changes this team's ceiling in a significant or meaningful way. And frankly, I think it just could make things weird. Like they had more chemistry last year, I think, more so with Trez
than anybody.
With Trez, Mark, it's just, it's the whole thing. I mean, they've played minutes with Markieff Morris at five. They've like, obviously AD at five is what we all expect to see when it really matters. And, you know, all of these guys, like they came to Los Angeles with the expectation that they would sacrifice because they were like, I want a ring. Like Mark didn't go there because he wanted to play a million minutes. Montrez didn't go there because he wanted to get a million touches in minutes. Like both those guys sacrificed money. They sacrificed touches. But I think they thought they were sacrificing a certain amount of minutes and touches and whatever. And they didn't anticipate the Lakers going and adding Andre Drummond to that mix as well. And now he's coming there on a minimum contract. He was just bought out. He could have chosen different situations where he had less of a chance of winning a title, but he had more of a chance of playing a bigger role. And he chose this one. So you would think they would all be like motivated to, you know, sacrifice and get along and make things work. It's just, it's easy to say that now. It's harder to say that if you're getting a DNP in a playoff game.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it fits. I mean, at least until AD comes back, there'll be enough touches and minutes for everybody because they just have to stop the bleeding, so to speak, until that all happens. You mentioned LaMarcus Aldridge to the Nets and Gorgie Jang going to the Spurs. So LaMarcus Aldridge was, I mean, people were just losing their minds over LaMarcus Aldridge going to the Nets because the Nets just get another player. I could see a scenario with LaMarcus Aldridge on the Nets where he just doesn't play for stretches. Like I know he's good, but he's a five, like you said, he's a five at this point. And I don't think he's going to play over DeAndre Jordan, even though DeAndre Jordan probably shouldn't be playing a ton of minutes, but also he shouldn't be playing over Nicholas Claxton, who is playing really well for them this year. And like, I think Blake actually looks pretty good with the Nets. So I think there's going to be situations when they're fully healthy where LaMarcus Aldridge doesn't even play for this team. And people are freaking out. Like, I can't believe the Nets got another player. Like, that's, I mean, if he would have gone to Boston or Miami or somewhere that needed some depth at the five and another stretch with big, I mean, it would have made more sense. Brooklyn, I think it's a legit ring chase for him because he really, I mean, it's not that he doesn't fit. He fits kind of anywhere because of his skill set, but they didn't need him. At least from my perspective.
And they didn't, I mean, depends how you define need. Like, I don't think they needed him. I don't think the Lakers needed Drummond. That's fair. it's just like the guy is there and he wants to come and he wants to come on a minimum. And the guys on the team apparently want him. So why not? Like, it's an insurance policy. If somebody else gets injured, it's another look. Like, it's another way to play. The Nets can play any way they want. They can be as big as they want. They can be as small as they want. They can be as stretchy as they want. They can be as switchy as they want. They have every option that you could possibly need to get through a playoff series. And that is what I do like about it. What I don't like about it is, I mean, it's going to be hard to talk about this without repeating what I said about the Lakers, but it's like, once you get into a playoff series and you have a bunch of, you know, prideful former all-stars, which, like, they have three of those and DeAndre, LaMarcus, and Blake. Yeah. And then you have a Jeff Green who, by the way, has been like mostly shooting the absolute lights out for the Nets this year and switching well, playing the exact same role that he played in Houston, just a perfect signing for what they need. And then, oh, by the way, you have this kid in Nicholas Claxton who, like, every nerd I know is equally obsessed with because he is as excited as Bam Adebayo is to switch onto guards on the perimeter and stay with them. He runs the floor super hard. He is a vertical spacing threat. He shoots like 80% from the, I don't know what his actual stats are, but he subsists on a diet of dunks, layups, and like, that's it. And then
he's DeAndre Jordan, but he's able to switch. What DeAndre Jordan was.
And then the switching is like quite literally a game changer, that you can do that with somebody who is that big. And he is active. He makes plays. He has energy. He is just like such a, like, just in terms of like what this roster is and what its holes are, like, you want guys like that. You want low usage guys who can just do all of the stuff that like James Harden and Kyrie Irving don't want to do and finish plays and just really fit into the switching scheme, because they've been building the switching defense all year long. So you have all these dudes, you have to figure out like not only what is your sort of base of like, what's our normal rotation going to look like, is like, once you're in a playoff series, you have to figure out how you're going to adjust, who's going to play against different kinds of lineups, who's going to play against different kinds of teams. Like, they don't have that much time to sort out everybody, like, getting chemistry with each other. Durant still isn't back. It's really funny if you go back and look at like what the talking points were when the Harden trade happened, because they just lost Jared Allen. And everybody's sitting here talking about like, how could they let this guy go? They have this massive hole in the front court. They really believe in this Reggie Perry guy, like this rookie, they're high on him. Now he's going to have to play. And like, now Claxton is back and awesome. They have Blake, they have Aldridge. Reggie Perry is on the team and completely forgotten about.
I forgot about him until you just said it.
And I have really no clue what this rotation is going to look like. And if you would ask me around then, I would have said it seems like their sort of standard thing, they're going to close games with like Jeff Green at the five. And now I don't know, maybe it should be Claxton. They're going to let Aldridge and Griffin have their opportunities. I think Blake has been pretty good. Blake is a guy that can help them, especially when the opposing team is switching, which is, by the way, a good thing to do generally against a team like this, is to just try to switch everything. And Blake is a counter to that. And Aldridge is also a counter to that. And Aldridge gives them a pick and pop guy. Blake is sort of a pick and pop guy. He's like more of like a short role playmaker to me. So Aldridge is a different kind of look. And he is a stretch five that gives you more size than Jeff Green. So in that way, he is something different. And I think a more significant difference from what they currently have than I would say Drummond is. But I would also say that they went into this with an even bigger logjam than the Lakers did.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. And then as far as the other guy, I mean, we mentioned Gorgui Jang. The only thing that's interesting about him going to the Spurs is that any like legit contender probably would have taken him this year. I mean, obviously the Lakers got their guy and the Nets got their guy, but any other team considered a contender, like at least with a chance to win their conference, probably would have taken him. So it's interesting that he went to the Spurs. I guess maybe because he sees Aldridge being gone and thinks he's going to go in and get minutes. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think they probably would have said, like, you will be – like, you and Poeltl will pretty much split the center position for us. Yeah. And I think just basketball-wise, it's an awesome fit because the Spurs are just – their entire roster is pretty much, like, athletic dudes who slash and want to drive and kick at this point. Mm-hmm. So – Gorgui Jang is a stretch five that like you kick to him and he'll knock down the shot. And like, that's what they lost with LaMarcus, and Gorgui is somebody that will be happier to play that role. And that makes sense to me, even if like probably we're both thinking the same thing. Like when this happens, like, oh, like it's not Philly who like doesn't have a stretch five to play with Ben Simmons when Embiid is on the bench. Like not any of these contending teams where he might make sense, like
Miami, Boston. I mean, any team that needs a backup or even a spot starter at the five when necessary. Sure. Yeah, any of those. I mean, the Clippers, right? Clippers could use them too. I mean, I think any of the contending teams probably could have. So, yeah, it was weird. Any other guys out there that you think in the coming week or weeks that could potentially make an impact that could get bought out? I mean, I haven't really seen a ton, but.
Okay. So like 4 years ago, I wrote this article. It was like the history of buyout guys. I think I called it like the long, sad history of the buyout market. And like the thesis of the story was basically every year we make a big deal out of this. And occasionally, whether you're talking PJ Brown, and the Celtics win the 2008 title, they drag him out of retirement to play for the team and he makes a huge shot and he's a hero. That can happen. Last year, Markieff Morris helped the Lakers win a title. He played meaningful minutes, made meaningful shots, made meaningful defensive plays, and they won the title. But that is like extremely rare. There are a bunch of these every year. Most of the time it doesn't work out. Most of the time it's guys who used to be a lot better than they were. Sometimes it causes like chemistry problems and weird issues where they're taking minutes that used to go to young guys. Sometimes it creates log jams and then it's awkward for the coach because this guy's a big name. I think the most famous example of that is when Andrew Bynum shows up on the Pacers and that destroys Roy Hibbert. And that team still ends up winning 56 games in the regular season, but it should have won 60 plus and it should have just had a better vibe going into the playoffs. But it was kind of a nightmare. So that is kind of like every time we get to this time of year, I think about all of those things that have gone wrong. And I don't allow myself to get that excited, though of course I can, like the rest of us, talk yourselves into, ooh, Gorgui Jang on the Sixers, that would be nice. So I don't know. I there's not a lot of dudes. Like if Kelly Olynyk were bought out, I think he could help some teams, but it doesn't seem like he's getting bought out. If Mike Muscala were to be bought out, then I think like there are a few teams that just need a large man who can make threes, and he can
be that.
He's
not playing tomorrow night. He's not playing. He's sitting with a foot thing.
He can be that large man. Sure, but like the Thunder don't buy guys out.
I know.
Like they just don't. So
we're going to get to that because that is something I want to hear about.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything, which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk to you about actually what you were just describing with the Bynum going to Indy and that situation sounds like a reason for teams to stay away from Boogie, who's still out there.
I mean, also just
potentially, and the fact that Boogie just can't really play anymore. But
I was gonna say, like, have you seen Boogie lately? Like, there's nothing in his Houston stint that suggested to me teams should be in a hurry to sign him.
He wasn't terrible. He just can't be on the court for more than like 4 or 5 minute stretches because he's slow and out of shape. He's still skilled. The skill is still there. He can still stretch the floor for you. He just can't play a ton of minutes.
Can he stretch the floor for you? Like, is any team worried about him on the perimeter? He has no gravity. His percentage is terrible. Like, he is strictly to me, like, he is a big body who can set big screens. He's a pretty good passer. He's a smart player, knows where to be. But, like, all the stuff that, like,
they shot 34% to be able to do this year, like, in Houston. He shot 34% from three in Houston.
Yeah, he had a few. Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing.
His field goal percentage was horrendous. He shot 38% from the field.
Yes, but he's shooting 34% on completely unguarded threes. Like I watched those games. Like, he had a few games where he went off and it looked nice. But by and large, like, teams do not care. They are willing to ignore him out there. And on the block, he used to be able to just, like, bulldoze guys. And he just, like, he's still strong, but he has such little lift at this point. And it's like, yeah. I'm not saying that he cannot have a job in the NBA. I think he can, but as far as getting minutes for a contender, like, I mean, we're already questioning whether or not LaMarcus Aldridge and Blake Griffin and, like, you know, these buyout guys, like, are they going to get, and Drummond, like, are they going to get minutes in important playoff games? Like, if we're asking those questions about them, there's no way DeMarcus Cousins is going to get minutes in, like, an important moment for a good team at this point in his career, which sucks, by the way, because I miss the old DeMarcus Cousins. But, like,
sure,
the version that we saw in Houston, man, like, it just, he had some moments, but by and large, like, it wasn't super encouraging.
Yeah, it seems as though most teams agree with you, because the way it, like, when that all went down, when he got bought out from Houston, the way it then went down was, it was like Boogie and the Rockets have agreed to part ways so he can find a better situation. But apparently that was probably less true than Houston just doesn't want to play Boogie anymore, and they want to give all the minutes to Christian Wood, who's clearly in their future plans.
Well, I mean, Christian Wood ends up missing like 18 games and they lose every single one of them. And that didn't, like, it wasn't just Christian Wood. Like, they I think they went into it hoping that, like, this could be a mutually beneficial thing. And it became pretty clear pretty quickly. Like, you know, you're trying, you're working, but, like, this isn't going to be a fit for us. And I think also part of it was, like, they had the intention of being, like, a good, respectable, competitive team this year. And that's what, like, you know, if John Wall was in the final season of his contract, like, I don't know that he's on the roster either, but he's not.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Like, so it's a little bit different, but I don't think they have a ton of use for veterans on expiring contracts at this point. Hell, even if, like, Eric Gordon was in his last year of his contract, I don't know if he's even on this team. And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they just, it was no longer a situation that made sense for a guy like him.
Yeah. Before we talk about the three games from tonight that we're going to talk from Sunday night that we're going to talk about, you mentioned OKC not buying guys out. And this is something I'm interested to hear your take on, because they announced that OKC announced that Al Horford will be inactive for the rest of the season. He will not play, but he will stay with the, he will be on their team. And that after the season, they'll figure out what's best, or figure out a different situation for him, for his future. My initial take on this is, and I think yours is going to be different, so I'm interested to hear. My initial take on this is, like, I don't understand how a team who is playing competitive basketball is allowed to just have a player that is their best big man, regardless of how Moses Brown is playing right now. Al Horford's the best big man on their team. They are playing competitive basketball. They just shut down the best player, or they have their best player on their team is actually out with an injury for a while. Now they're going to shut down Al Horford and make themselves less competitive. It just so happens that this team has 40 draft picks over the next 4 years. It just seems strange to me that they're allowed to just shut down a player that makes them a better team in the midst of being a competitive, not a good team that's winning a ton of games, but a they're better this year than I think anyone thought they would be. And it just, the timing of it is all weird that they're in the back half of the year. Now all of a sudden, none of their good players are playing and they have all these draft picks that need to sort of, I mean, they're not all their draft picks, so this doesn't necessarily impact all of them, but I just don't understand how the league allows them to just shut a player down when the whole thing over the past few years is how do we curb tanking? How do we fix the tanking thing?
Well, I mean, who is this bad for?
It's just, it's bad for the, I mean, why not buy him out? Why are they?
Because he has like multiple years left on his extremely expensive contract. And he like that would not work really for either side. I don't think Horford wants to all of a sudden be a minimum guy. He would have to give back a lot of that money. Like Blake made a financial sacrifice to do what he did. Look, this was going to happen like with like 15 games left in the season or something. It does not really make sense if you're this kind of team and you already know that you're going to try to trade this guy in the offseason to play him in these games and risk injury. I don't think it made sense from Horford's perspective to do that. What sped it up is what you mentioned. It's the Shea injury. Shea's healthy. This wouldn't have happened. Like it would happen later. But it's not some sort of coincidence that these two things happened at the same time. Shea's injury changed the calculus. It meant this team that we both agree has been super fun, has overachieved.
In a big way.
I mean, I don't know if we looked at it right now, if it would still be so. But for a large portion of the season, the starting lineup had a positive point differential, which is like, kind of crazy.
And yeah, Al Horford was supposed to be terrible.
Horford had a lot to do with that. George Hill early in the season had a lot to do with that, but then he got hurt and now he is a Sixer. And then obviously Shea is just like the coolest player in the NBA and I love him and everybody should love watching him and the Thunder should be extremely excited about their future. But as soon as Shea gets hurt, like it's not that team anymore. The team that you're talking about being surprisingly fun and like maybe going to the playoffs and all this stuff, that doesn't exist. So now you're talking about parading Al Horford out there for these meaningless games with, you know, like Lou Dort and like Poku. And yeah. I love Lou Dort and I love Poku for very different reasons, but I don't see the point. So this makes sense to me that this is best for all parties. I don't think Al Horford is upset that this is happening. I think if Al Horford could choose to be on this team versus for this team to have found a way to trade him or for the Sixers to have traded him somewhere else or for the Sixers thing that he was excited about to have worked out better. Sure, of course. But I don't think Al Horford's upset that he's not playing tomorrow night.
I don't think I mean it more like from a standpoint of it's just like I understand that it's best for them in their future. And Horford, it is what it is. He either is going to be there or he's not going to be there. But if they told him they wanted him to play, he would play. If they told him they don't want him to play, then he won't play. It's basically announcing to the league that we're trying to lose.
I mean, I'm sorry. Like, was anybody in the league confused about that before this? Like,
I mean, they were stable.
Everybody knows the Thunder. I mean, they traded George Hill. They have all year been playing a second unit that is mostly composed of guys who are like at best on the fringes of the NBA. They I mean, I think they just very obviously, like, they have done everything that a tanking team would do. They happened to win a few more games than the average tanking team, but everybody knew the score all season long. All season long, everybody knew they were going to try to trade their veterans. They were unable to trade Al Horford, and then Shea got hurt. Mm-hmm. So this is the result. But I don't, like, you're saying they're sending a message to the rest of the league. Like, there's nobody in the NBA who's like, oh, they're not trying to win?
Like, well, but on. I'm saying, but I guess I'm just saying it's more like they've been, I understand that Shea changes the dynamic and makes them worse than they, I mean, he's their whole team at this point, but what a guy gets hurt. I feel like for a lot of other franchises, if a guy got hurt and they just were like, all right, we're just going to stop trying, other franchises would get looked at differently. It just feel like OKC doesn't get looked at the same because the intention coming into the season was for them to be bad. They played better than expectations. And now it's like, okay, well, they were supposed to be bad from the beginning. So it's okay that they're not playing, that they're not going to try to win. They're going to sit one of their best. You know what? It's just like it's a weird sort of standard, right? Like coming into the year, everyone was like, well, this team's going to be terrible. And they're intending to be terrible. Look at the team they're putting out on the floor. They overachieved. So now they're benching what, their second best player on their team. And it's like, well, they were never
supposed
to be.
The whole thing is, if Shea was healthy, they weren't going to do this yet. They were going to do it right at the end of the year, which is normal. Like, it is normal at the end of the year when you're getting close, if your season is going nowhere, if you have a veteran, especially if you're probably going to trade him, but just if you have any veteran with like knickknacks in their body, you just sit him. Like, that's how it works. They just did it early because Shea got hurt and it didn't make any sense to like have this guy continue to go out there with this group of young dudes who is like, they're actually like, how they perform this season will make a difference between like, in terms of their development, in terms of how the Thunder value them, in terms of like where their careers go from here. Al Horford is Al Horford. We have seen enough this year to know, like, he is still a good player. He is not as bad as he looked in Philadelphia.
Not because even close. Yeah.
That was a fit thing, which I think most smart people said that last year. Mm-hmm. And the numbers even showed that when he wasn't on the court with Embiid, he was essentially the same guy. Like, I think this season has been actually helpful to Al Horford's reputation in that sense. It was not helpful enough that anybody wanted to acquire his like $29 million salary, whatever it is, but yeah, it was helpful. What
is next year's is last year, right? Not like after this year, he has one more year.
No, he has two more years.
Oh, geez.
The last year is not fully guaranteed. But yes, he has two more years.
Oh yeah. He has 27 next year and then 26.5 the year after.
Yeah, but the 26.5 is not fully guaranteed. And there are some incentives there based on like if you make the finals or you 14, win the championship. Yeah, like
14.5 guaranteed and then 19.5 guaranteed if Philly, but if they make the finals.
If whichever team he's on.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah. And then I think if they actually win the title, if Al Horford wins a championship next year, he's getting all of his money, I think, is the other incentive in that deal. I don't know what team he'll be on, but yeah, it's possible. It's
possible.
I understand that it looks weird. I am just very personally against getting upset about things that look weird. Like, I just don't know who is like genuinely upset about this because I don't see who this is bad for. But that's just me.
I think, I get where you're coming from. I do, because all of it is right. Like, you're right. Like, it doesn't hurt Al Horford. It doesn't hurt the Thunder. And everyone assumed the Thunder were going to be bad. There's just like a perception thing to me that there's been like over the years trying to at least make it seem like teams are competing, even when they're not. And just like benching a guy that's one of your best players just makes it clear that you're not competing, even though they were going to do it at some point anyways. It's just sort of a signal.
I just think it has always made sense for teams that are bad to prioritize development and prioritize giving their young guys minutes. So,
yeah, but
tanking is not like, oh, they're going to go into this game and they're going to tell our guys like, we don't want you to play hard. We don't want you to play with passion. We want you to lose. Like, they're going to try to win with this team. They're just going to be too bad to win.
Which well, is, exactly. Yeah.
Which is perfectly fine. Like, this is how the league works. And like, if anything, like, I mean, the NBA should be like quite happy if there all these rule changes were to prevent tanking. Like, they have basically worked. There were much fewer sellers at the trade deadline, and I don't think that that is unrelated to the fact that you have this play-in tournament. I also think there has been a trend basically since the lottery odds changed, to where teams are not tanking as hard. Like, teams do not think we have to be absolutely the rock bottom, because it doesn't make a difference if you have the worst record in the NBA or the third or fourth best record. It doesn't matter anymore. So I think tanking has gotten less extreme in the last few years. It has gotten particularly like almost pretty much absent from the NBA this year. So to make a big deal out of this one team doing this one thing, it feels like just sort of like missing the bigger picture story here, which is that hardly anybody is tanking. So like, let's let these guys do it. Like, let's let the Thunder do their patient plan. Like, they had to trade everybody away. They're in a small market. They can't lure guys in free agency. So they're doing a thing that is like very painful and very difficult. And I actually respect the hell out of the front office for doing this, like, extreme, like, we're going to get 34 draft picks. Like, I think it's awesome. And I love watching Poku, even though he doesn't know what he's doing half the time. He's great. So he's
an interesting player. I'll bring you back. We'll have a whole other podcast about the 37 draft picks in the next six drafts conversation, because that's a whole, that could take us down a whole other wormhole. But we should talk about at least the games that we watched tonight, particularly Aaron Gordon's debut. But before we get to that, I want to talk about Blue Wire Hustle real quick. If you're looking to start your own podcast and you're not really entirely sure how the process works or what you want to do, there's really no better place to host your show than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, it's the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show published out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. The best part is you can get all this for $15 a month, which is the same rate that any other hosting site would charge, but that's just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listening to me or us talk about your favorite team, then make your voice heard in Hustle. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in this episode to find out more, but that is bwhustle.com/join. All right, so talked about it off the top. Aaron Gordon makes his debut for the Denver Nuggets. Obviously, his career in Orlando is, you know, underwhelming to a lot of people. The fit maybe not always right. That team kind of one of those mediocrity treadmill teams for a long time. Wasn't really sure where his career is headed. He gets a new start in Denver. And I'll tell you, like, just seeing him on the floor in a Denver uniform before they even tipped, I was like, damn, I'm pretty excited for what this team looks like right now, because I was like, he just brings something to that start, even to that starting lineup that obviously Jeremy Grant kind of brought, but even at his age and his potential, there's more there. There was something there. And then he looks good in that lineup, man. He looks like he's going to bring a whole lot to that team that they desperately needed.
It made me so happy to see him in that uniform, even though I got to say, I don't love the number 50 thing and his explanation being
the dunk contest thing. Yeah.
He has the most 50s. Yeah. I mean, I could have done without that part, but I have been as kind of excited for him to get a new start as anybody. I've been talking about them the Magic potentially trading him for like 4 years now. It finally happened. This is the first time I've ever seen Aaron Gordon play in a non-terrible NBA offense. It's the first time I've seen him play with multiple guys who can get you like 20 points. And honestly, like the last few weeks since they've like committed to the MPJ Jamal Jokic thing, like they've all been averaging 20 points. They've been incredible together. Their offense has been nuts. And you slot Gordon into that. You tell him to run the floor. You tell him to cut hard to the basket. You tell him to shoot basically open in rhythm shots and nothing else. And it's your life just gets a lot better. He's a really good finisher. He maybe has lost a little bit of the athleticism that he had when he came into the league and was like the most athletic human being I've seen in my entire life. But like when you start at that point and you lose a little bit of it, you're still an elite NBA athlete. And he obviously is. To see him cutting from the corner, like running off a Jamal Murray screen and getting a pass from Jokic and throwing down a reverse dunk, to then see him cutting in from the wing and making a short jumper from Jokic and to score on the break and like all of this stuff. Like it's beautiful. It's what I think anybody who cares about Aaron Gordon's career and who has wanted more for him. Like this is what we have been hoping for. This is what we have wanted when putting him into fake trades over the years. And I just think it's one of these rare trade deadline scenarios where like he needs the team just as much as the team needs him. It is an absolutely perfect fit on both sides. They have been desperate for a Grant replacement. It's not just Grant that they lost. They lost Torrey Craig. And now you have Aaron Gordon who can switch on to almost anybody in the NBA. And he will have more energy to fully commit to defense because he is not being asked to do much of anything as a playmaker. And I watched his Zoom conference yesterday, and he was saying all the right things in that regard and about how he wanted to guard all the best players in the league and how excited he was about this situation. And I mean, like, we'll see. Like, it has been literally one game. I've watched, like, I mean, I, full disclosure, I stopped watching like halfway through the third quarter so we could record this. Like, I have seen not even a full Aaron Gordon game.
Well, he didn't even play in the, like, they were, the, it was such a blowout. He ended up not even playing.
One full Aaron Gordon game, but it was like 20 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, he only played 20 minutes. So, yeah.
Sure. I think it is an adjustment. It is very different from what he is used to. He is the fifth option on this starting five, which he has not been for a while. I don't even know if he was the fifth option as a rookie, maybe. Yeah, we'll see how he likes this once he's a few weeks into it. We'll see how he likes this, particularly if they end up having a rough stretch, right? Yeah. But I think this is the early going, and he looked just so happy to be in that system. I was very happy to watch him play. I was happy to watch him like switching on to Trae Young on the perimeter, and Trae wanted nothing to do with him. Like, this is a player type that they have been like in desperate need of for quite a while. And I think, they were able to sort of, they threw Paul Millsap at guys. They threw Jamichael Green at guys. They threw Will Barton at bigger guys. They sometimes, they ask Porter to take a difficult defensive assignment, which, I mean, he's long and big enough to, but like, that's just not what you want. That's certainly not what you're going to want in a playoff series. So they have a legitimate dude that can do all that stuff that Grant did, that Craig did. He is not the shooter that Grant was in the bubble, but frankly, like this new version of Jeremy Grant, like that, even in the bubble, like really up until late in the playoffs, like teams were not necessarily treating him as a shooter. He was taking a lot of wide open looks. You can see even in the first game, teams are just going to lay off of him and let him shoot. And he made a couple of those threes. He airballed one. And I think we're like, the Nuggets are just going to have to live with that. But they had to live with that to a certain extent with Jeremy Grant too. And Jeremy Grant made more than enough of those in the playoffs when it really mattered. And we'll see if Gordon can make his fair share.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing that you hit on that is definitely going to be something to watch is, like, I think last year, especially in the playoffs, Jeremy Grant defensively was such a catalyst for that team. And obviously they've been missing that since they lost him, and Aaron Gordon's going to be asked to step in and sort of pick up the slack in that case when he's just like these other guys, when he's 15, 20 games in and he's still the fourth or fifth offensive option, is he going to continue to be motivated to be a defensive stopper who's the fourth or fifth option on a team? Like at 25 years old, trying to still find his way to be, to finding his potential in the NBA. Like, Jeremy Grant was never expected to be a superstar necessarily. So he sort of fit into that role and he took the challenge because he was incredible, particularly in the bubble for them defensively. Will Aaron Gordon continue to keep that, this enthusiasm for being a lockdown defender when there's games where he only takes five shots?
Yeah, we'll have to see. I think if you're looking for reasons for optimism, I would say, well, this is a team that went to the Western Conference Finals last year asking him to do it. This is a team with an MVP candidate already on it, with a guy who was dropping 50-point games in the playoffs already on it. I think, you know, you don't think of like Will Barton as like a star or anything like that, but I think he quite obviously could be putting up bigger numbers on another team and he's already sacrificing. So I think that sets an example for Aaron Gordon to, like, he's literally the fifth option in that starting five. Like, it's not fourth or fifth. Will Barton is very clearly ahead of him on the pecking order, I think, and should be in terms of playmaking. So I think if there was ever a situation where he was going to do it, it would be this one, because it is a team that I think fully believes it's capable of winning a championship. It's a team that has star power on it, that has just a lot of talent and has a big need for the other stuff that he does. And like, I think also it's fun to play on this team. Like, it is not as if they are asking him, this is not like last year's Rockets acquired him. Right. Mm-hmm. And, or even like this year's Mavericks or something. And they're like, all right, you're going to stand on the perimeter. And you're going to just wait for the ball and maybe you'll get it. And if you're wide open, shoot it. If you're sort of open, probably pass it. And like, and otherwise get your points in transition or whatever. Like, no, like, he gets to be involved. Even if he's not getting shots up, like, he is going to be setting screens. He is going to be cutting. He is going to be passing. He had an awesome pass, like an over the shoulder pass to the corner off of a short roll, I think, in the third quarter. And it's like, you know, he was talking about yesterday on his Zoom, he was talking about how he thinks people sleep on his passing ability. By the way, I agree. He's a good passer and he's going to get to show that he's a good passer in this system. And he's going to feel involved, even if it is rare that he is able to score a ton of points. But you know what he will get if he doesn't have the raw point totals? He'll be way more efficient than at any other time in his career. And it will make him more valuable to other teams in the NBA because of it.
Yeah. He initiated the offense on a couple possessions in the second half too.
Bringing
the ball up in their elbow set. So yeah, I mean, he'll be more involved. All right. Two other teams that actually traded with each other at the deadline, Portland and Toronto, they played tonight. Portland ends up winning 122-117. What were your thoughts on this swap? Because when my first instinct was like, and they're committing to pay Norm Powell by trading for him, and they're giving up two wing players who do similar things to what Norm Powell does. Not that they're better in any way, but they have similar skill sets. It seemed like a weird trade for Portland. But Norm, I mean, he didn't blow anybody away in this game. He looked pretty good within their offense. I mean, I don't know. I thought it was a weird deal for them, but I don't know. What were your thoughts when you saw that?
Yeah, well, I want to preface this by saying, like, I covered Norm when he was, like, a rookie. Like, I profiled him that year. Like, I was around all those Raptor teams. This is, like, not the player. Like, and I thought he was good. Like, I was excited about him. This is not the player I anticipated him becoming. Like, he is this dead-eye shooter now. Every time he shoots, I expect it to go in. It seems like this year they just all have. He has this, like, very aggressive attacking mentality. I think they probably liked that. That, you know, every year they have teams trapping Dame, trapping CJ, and they haven't had a ton of other guys who can just go and punish that quickly. Part of the reason why Nurk has fit in well is because he can punish that as the short roll guy. Mm-hmm. Norm punishes it in a different way, in a way that, you know, Trent can hit some shots, but he's not as dynamic an offensive player as Norm Powell is. Rodney Hood can run a pick and roll. He can get you a post up against a mismatch. There's stuff he can do, but you're not game planning for Rodney Hood the same way that you're game planning for Norman Powell. So that to me is why they did it. The weird part, the reason why I had a sort of similar reaction to you, is that like, if you would ask me what should the Blazers be looking to do at the deadline, it would not be turn Gary Trent into like a worse defender on the wing than they had. Like, you know what I mean? Like they profile as a very, very good offensive team that just is nowhere near good enough defensively to hang when it really matters. And so to me, this made them a worse defensive team. It's not that Norm is a bad defender. In fact, like part of the reason why I said he's turned out to be different than I thought is that when he came in, he was known as like a lockdown guy. Like he was this insanely aggressive perimeter defender. He's got this like 6'9" wingspan. I remember as the coach of the G League team at the time saying he's like an Avery Bradley, but with more offense. And it's like,
Was it Nick Nurse?
No, yeah, it was Jesse Mirmus. Nick Nurse was never the Raptors G League coach. He was a G League coach at the RGV. But he has not become that sort of stopper guy. And I think he has focused much more on offense his past few years in Toronto, and his decision-making on defense has been a little bit iffy. So to me, that was just a little bit weird, because it was to me like you make that move, like it's an offensive-minded move. Now I will say I've watched Norm's first two games with the Blazers, and that's probably the most aggressive, intense defense that he's played all year. And I don't think that's unrelated to the fact that he's now playing in a way better offense than he was playing in Toronto. So it's just like you adjust to the role that you're in, right? So maybe it just ends up being an upgrade and my initial reaction is wrong, but like my initial reaction was the same as yours. It was just like, I don't think this is really what they need, but cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a team that I think probably would have benefited more from going and getting an Aaron Gordon, right? Like that they could have bolstered their front court defense, whatever.
People have been talking about that for years. Like people were talking about like CJ for Gordon a few years ago. And like, obviously that wouldn't happen now because CJ has reached this level that like, he's one of the best offensive players in the game. That's not going to happen. But clearly like, I mean, Covington was sort of their Gordon move. And then Derek Jones Jr. was kind of like their other Gordon-like move. Except the problem is like, just Covington is not the same kind of one-on-one defender that Gordon is. And Derek Jones Jr. is this like massive liability on offense. So like the beauty of Gordon.
That layup he had tonight though was crazy. Mm-hmm. That 360 whatever reverse.
He does spectacular stuff like that. And I like watching him play for that reason. But the beauty of Gordon is that even though he's not the best shooter, he can be a helpful offensive player. And he is a really good, I'd say he's an elite man defender, much more so than a help defender. I think he's a fine help defender, but like, he's not the help defender that like Covington is. Right. Sure. But so, yeah, like I think there's a reason why people were talking about that for years. And like, similarly, that is just definitely not what you're getting with Norman Powell. But I think it's also going to be really hard to defend this team. And maybe now you go from before where it's like, all right, in a playoff series, like you're always going to have one of Dame or CJ on the court. Now it's like, you're always going to have two of Dame and CJ and Norm on the court, which is just, it's a different thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You covered, like you just mentioned how you covered the Raptors for a long time. What's going to happen? Like what is this? Where does this team go? Like, obviously it seemed as though at the deadline, they were trying to get more for Lowry than teams were willing to give up. They made those two moves to make space. It seemed like they weren't able to make any moves. Now Lowry's going to be a free agent. They paid Siakam, Van Fleet, OG. If they want to keep Boucher, they're going to have to pay him. But it seems like a lot of money for a team that probably is not really going anywhere, especially as good as the East has become. Like, what do you see for the future of this team?
I think I'm not as down on them as you are based on the way you framed the question, because I look at it and it's like, well, you still have Van Vliet, you still have Ananobi, you still have Siakam, regardless of what happens with Lowry, I think quite clearly, unless they have their eye on somebody in particular they just want to use their cap space on and they think they can get in free agency, then I think you either want to re-sign him or sign and trade him. But I think there had to be some sort of bar that these offers had to clear at the deadline for you to be like, let's do this now rather than waiting. And I don't know what that bar was. I don't know what they were offered exactly. It sounds like the Lakers didn't even want to include like Talen Horton Tucker in their offer, which like, if that's the case, then what are you even offering? Like, did you really expect they're going to trade the greatest player in franchise history for like Schroeder and KCP and like no draft pick and no young prod? Like, that doesn't make sense. It sounded like, you know, the Heat offer was like no Tyler Hero. So build the thing around Duncan Robinson, who, by the way, you have to pay a shitload of money to this summer if you want to keep him. The Sixers offer, I never really like completely understood what was on the table. I think
sounded like it was
the implication was like
they were trying to get Maxey and Thybulle, but they didn't want to give up either one or both or something.
It seemed like they were hesitant to include everything. I'm sure their position was not, you cannot have Maxey and you cannot have Thybulle either, and you can have nothing, but we want him for Danny Green and just have Danny Green back because you loved him. But I don't think they were willing to sweeten the pot too much. In fact, like, it's like, I haven't even heard like a legitimate like reporter say that a first round pick of any kind was definitively on the table. And this is Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
So if you're not getting either a young, like high upside player or a first round pick, like, what do you, like, you don't do it. And so I don't know what exactly it was, but if it was something like that, then I'm totally fine with what they did. I don't know what exactly this is going to look like next year. I think this is whatever their record is now. They are the best team in NBA history to have that record at this point in the season. They have had a completely cursed season. They started out extremely poorly. I think the adjustment to being in Tampa was super weird. Then they lose, four players, including like three of their best players, multiple coaches. They all get sick with COVID at the same time. They're all out for an extended period of time. They lose all of those games. This happens, by the way, right as they were playing their best basketball of the season.
And they went small when they started to go small.
They lose all that momentum. And now they're trying to sort of integrate those guys back in. Then they make a trade. They're like, you can see it when you watch them. They have stretches where they look like the Raptors. They look really good. And then they just lose their mojo and like, whatever, like they might end up in this close game and not be able to pull it out, which is what we saw tonight. They could have easily won that game. They didn't happen to win that game. But they did not, to me, look like they were somehow in a different league from the Blazers or anything like that.
And Kyle didn't play tonight either.
Exactly. So I look at this and it would not surprise me if they had a late season run. I think if you are a higher seeded team, you don't want to see them in the playoffs. If you are a play-in team, you do not want to have to deal with this annoying ass team in the play-in. They are still just the average basketball game is different than a Raptors game. They play defense differently. They push the pace like crazy. They have very smart, just very good defensive players. And then you look at the numbers and you're just like, this hasn't worked. But I think there are a whole bunch of reasons why the numbers have played out the way that they have. And weirdly, like some of those like season long trends that have been bad, you haven't seen the last couple of games. Like they've been awful in terms of just fouling the shit out of people. They didn't do that today. They didn't do that in the previous game. Like Siakam's like getting to the line a ton, which they've needed. They have been awful in terms of giving up a ton of threes, specifically corner threes. How many corner threes did the Blazers shoot tonight? Like two, three? Like it was not a lot. Like I don't think they played an altogether bad game. I think it was a little bit weird. I think they ended up closing the game with Stanley Johnson for defense, partially because they don't want to put Gary Trent or Rodney Hood necessarily in that position late in the game right now. And Stanley Johnson was actually making a bunch of defensive plays, but then like you have Stanley Johnson out there, the other team is going to ignore him on the 3-point line.
Completely, yeah.
So this is the life that they've been living all year when they're relying on the likes of Stanley Johnson and Malachi Flynn or some of the guys they just traded and Thomas and Davis. And like Yuta for a while was like a revelation. He was like a positive story for a while.
Anthony Edwards ended his career, I think, maybe.
He contested the shot. He challenged
he
it.
He tried.
I don't have a succinct good, obviously it's not succinct, but it's, I don't think I have a great answer for you in terms of like what this team will look like next year. I think they don't know. I genuinely don't think Kyle knows where he's going to be. But I'm interested to see how the rest of the season plays out. I think it's quite obvious they're capable of being a good team. They have been a good team for quite a while. A few weeks ago, when they were before the COVID stuff happened, like their net rating was virtually the same as Philadelphia's over the course of the season. That's including their shit ass stretch at the beginning, and that's not including Joel Embiid getting hurt and being out of the rotation. So, like, that's kind of crazy. Obviously, that's fallen. But yeah, it's a very weird situation, and I am just kind of loath to make too many kind of conclusions about what they're going to be based on this very weird season.
Yeah. The best 18 and 28 team in NBA history. There it is.
That is, I think, not even close.
All right. Before we wrap up, the last game we're going to talk about today was at 1 o'clock on Sunday, Phoenix, Charlotte, overtime game. Phoenix wins 101-97. We know what Phoenix is. We all know they're very good. That is a very good basketball team. Charlotte, however, once LaMelo Ball went down, everyone wondered what would happen going forward. They got a vintage Devontae Graham performance today, 30 out of him, hits the shot to put them into overtime. You wrote a pretty good article on CBS Sports today about how this team moving forward and what they are without LaMelo Ball. What was it? Basically, the gist was, in your mind, it doesn't really change things without LaMelo Ball. Like, what they're building pretty much stays the same as they go forward, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was a few days ago, but it wasn't like a column about LaMelo. Like, this was a feature. This is like a story about like their season and who they are. And like, I got to talk to Kupchak, I got to talk to Borrego, I got to talk to a bunch of the players, and like got to talk to Jay Triano, the assistant coach there. And I just, they've been probably the single most fun team in the NBA for me to watch this season. And I wanted to write about them. And then, you know, what ends up happening is, as I'm writing the story, I've done all the reporting, like LaMelo's, like, I'm not going to say the season ends because it hasn't officially ended. Even Kupchak talked about that the other day. Like, they're going to basically see how he feels. And they're going to make that determination, but they have not ruled him out in terms of potentially being a part of like this team late in the regular season in a potential play-in scenario and potential playoff games. Like, we might see LaMelo with this team again, but it's a significant injury. It obviously changes the feel for the team. But I think, given that a lot of what I was trying to do was to like simultaneously capture what is special about LaMelo and the impact that he's had on this team, the impact that he's had on this organization, and show that it's not just the LaMelo show. Like, the injury almost gave me a way to drive that point home more directly and more aggressively, because I think now it becomes more important that last year their assist percentage and their passes per game virtually the same as they are now. It becomes more important that these good vibes and this good chemistry that we've seen from them on the court was something that actually started really when they went to this in-market bubble in September, when we were all watching the conference finals and not giving a shit about the 8 teams that weren't invited to Orlando. And these guys were spending a lot of time together and they missed the game and all of this stuff. So yeah, like, they when they got LaMelo, a lot of us thought this was going to be like, they're going to use him like Trae Young. He's going to run 1,000 pick and rolls a game. He's going to have the ball in his hands. It's going to be just, this is LaMelo's team and everything is going to revolve around him. Instead, he comes off the bench for the first 20 games of his career. And they now, without him, they go back to that starting backcourt that they had for virtually all of last season for the first 20 games of this year. They still have between Gordon Hayward, who has fit in as beautifully as they could have possibly hoped, and Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier, who has been the best clutch player in the NBA, and Malik Monk, who didn't play today, and yet they still came as close as you can possibly get to beating a championship contender in the Suns, and who had a huge game the other night and has hit clutch shots himself this year. Like, between those guys, they should still have enough playmaking, even if they don't have the exact same vibe as they had with LaMelo. They also went, since I published the story, they went and acquired Brad Wanamaker as just like another, basically like another insurance policy, another steady hand for their team. And they got him for basically nothing. So like, that's cool. But yeah, I mean, I have loved the vibe of this team all year long. They've been my favorite team to watch from the couch. And
They've been a hall or a league pass. Like, go, you got to watch, like, especially if it's close, because Terry Rozier this year is just, I mean, obviously he's not the most clutch player, but God, I mean,
he has been, but
he seems like the most clutch player in the NBA this year. I mean, there's Dame, but
no, but the number, like, I mean, he actually missed some shots late today, so I don't know what they are, but he was leading the NBA in true shooting percentage in the clutch. Like,
it's crazy. I mean, it's been unbelievable. Yeah. I'll say, like,
and even like Bridges, like, clearly LaMelo and Bridges were like a match made in heaven, but Bridges today had like 5 different highlight plays, one of which was unfairly taken away. It should have been an and one.
I saw you tweet about that. Yeah, I saw you tweet about that.
And that came at a very important, like, pivotal point of the game when the Hornets want to run. And I could complain about that for another 5 minutes, but I won't. But that, just to say, like, Miles Bridges is like, he's personifies kind of what I'm talking about here, is that LaMelo, obviously, like, he enhances everything about Miles Bridges' game. Their chemistry is amazing. I want them to be on the same team for the rest of their careers. But you take LaMelo out and you can still have Miles Bridges throwing down numerous highlight dunks in the same game, because the Hornets are still trying to play that same way. They still have that unselfish vibe. They still have a lot of playmaking on the roster, and they're still going to be competitive without LaMelo. They've shown that.
Yeah. I'll just say, I think I've mentioned a couple times on this show, what Mitch Kupchak has done since he took over as the GM of that organization is, it's one of the most impressive jobs that anyone is doing currently in the NBA. And I think if you asked half of NBA fans who the GM of the Hornets was, they wouldn't even realize it was Mitch Kupchak. I spent 5 years with that organization in the video room, and I don't remember one move that we made in 5 years that succeeded. It was just an absolute horror of 5 years. And I mean, I feel like every move he makes in the last 3 years, they all work.
That first season of Batum, though, man. That first season of Batum.
Batum was the year after I left. The year after I left. But I mean, starting with Devontae Graham and then Bridges, and like, his drafts have been good. When they traded Kemba for Terry Rozier, everyone was like, oh, this, what are they doing? Terry Rozier is pretty damn good. And I bet Boston would love to have Terry Rozier right now. I mean, just every move, the Gordon Hayward contract, everyone's like, what the hell are you doing? Looks great. Just every move seems to be working out. Obviously hiring James, moving on from Cliff was a sore spot for me, 'cause that's my guy, but James Borrego has been great for them. Obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going so under the radar what he has done with an organization that basically since MJ took over has been, I mean, since the beginning, since they were the Bobcats, and I was there for the last year of the Bobcats, like, it was just an absolute dumpster fire is the word that gets overused, but it really was that. What he's doing in a small market where you're not supposed to be able to build these type of, like, he's building something pretty fun if anything, it's fun, but they got enough young pieces, and we'll see what LaMelo turns into, that they're a pretty competitive team. I wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason, I mean, obviously, like, primarily, like, you offer Gordon that money that is going to be an attractive sales pitch in and of itself. But, like, he had other suitors. He had other teams that were willing to pay him. They sold him on the style of play. And, you know, he has, you know, a close friend on staff. Ron Norred was a college teammate.
They played
of
at
his.
And
they had conversations. But, I mean, he also, like, Gordon... This isn't in the story, but like when I talked to Hayward, like he told me he like called up Marvin Williams. He called up Cody Zeller. Like he had long conversations with Borrego about how they wanted to play. And it just sounded like, well, this is how I want to play basketball. And if you look at it, like if you look at, I mean, starting from last year, when I think a lot of people, as soon as like just the Devonte storyline was like, oh my God, where's this guy? Like, where has he come from? This is awesome. And then immediately following that is like, wait, but they just paid Rozier all this money. How is this going to work? And then it's like, oh, well, this is going to work because both of them are fine with it. Because the way the offense works is like, they all get a chance to be involved. Terry Rozier happened to turn into like one of the best catch and shoot guys in the entire league. And he has sustained that this year. It was not a problem. They got along off the court. They got along on the court. They added Gordon Hayward to that mix. They added LaMelo Ball to that mix. I think rookies aren't always the most popular guys on NBA teams, especially if they're highly touted and they are high usage guys. But LaMelo is an exception because he is this super positive, super fun, just full of energy guy who everybody loves. And then who the hell wouldn't like playing with him? Like passing is his favorite thing to do. He is constantly giving it up. And like, he has enhanced the way that they already played. Gordon has enhanced the way that they already played. So they got a lot more talented. I would say Hayward and Ball are the two most talented players on the team. But they also like, they didn't have to reorient everything that they were doing. So they play a really fun style on offense. They play a pretty aggressive style defensively. They're not a great defensive team. They need more defensive talent. Like when, if we're talking about what they need to do in the future, like it's not that hard to zero in on, like, you know, they need to improve in the front court. They need to improve defensively, but like they try stuff. They press a lot. Early in the year, they were playing zone all the time. They don't do that as much, but like they'll still throw it out there. Like they are an extremely well-coached team. They are a team that has very good chemistry. They're a team that have been just so resilient and have won a shitload of these close games. And they happened to lose one today to a Chris Paul led team. And I don't think there's necessarily any shame in that. But yeah, man, like I'm as bummed as anybody else about not watching LaMelo, but like, I'm still going to like watch the Hornets. They're still cool.
No, yeah. As cool as LaMelo has been, Terry Rozier has been just as fun to me because it's unbelievable. Every time I turn on a Hornets game, it's like, it's Terry Rozier. It's a scary territory. That's what we call it on the pod. It's just at fourth quarters for the Hornets, scary territory. James, appreciate you jumping on with me, man. It's been fun. Outside the NBA, you can go follow him on Twitter, go read all his stuff on cbssports.com, and appreciate you coming on. We'll see you next time. Anything else you want to promote? Any other articles coming up or features this week that you got coming out?
I don't really know what I'm going to have this week. No, I just say like, if you could read one thing, like please read my Hornet story. I worked a lot on that. Yeah. I worked hard on that. And then, you know, I wrote about some of the stuff we talked about. I wrote about Gordon. I wrote about the Magic teardown, which we didn't really talk about. And yeah. I wrote about George Hill, which we didn't really talk about. So there, I have a bunch of stuff up on the website. Spoiler, I think George Hill is good. I think he will help the Sixers. That's my crazy
Alex,
take.
Alex was pumped up about that. He's a big Philly guy. He was pumped when that happened. So I think a lot of Philly fans are happy with that. All right, dude. Appreciate you coming on. Everyone will be back tomorrow morning. Alex back after a long, long week off. Let's see what he's got to say about everything that went on last week. I'll see you guys tomorrow morning. Later.